Welcome to an excerpt of the CME activity, PCI Guidelines 2011, Focus on Antiplatelet Therapies, which is certified by Medscape and presented by Eric R. Bates, MD, Stephen K. James, MD, PhD, Robert F. Story, MD, and Gio Montalesco, MD, PhD. Dr. Bates is a professor of internal medicine, Cardiovascular Division, University of Michigan Medical Center, Ann Arbor, Michigan. Dr. Bates has disclosed the following relevant financial relationships. He served as an advisor or consultant for AstraZeneca Pharmaceuticals, Eli Lilly and Company, Merck and Company, and Sanofi Aventis. Dr. Bates does intend to discuss off-label uses of drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Bates does not intend to discuss investigational drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics not approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. James is an associate professor of medicine, director, cardiac catheterization and interventional cardiology, Department of Cardiology, Uppsala Clinical Research Center, Uppsala University Hospital, Uppsala, Sweden. Dr. James has disclosed the following relevant financial relationships. He served as an advisor or consultant for AstraZeneca Pharmaceuticals, Boston Scientific, Eli Lilly and Company, Medtronic, Terumo Medical Corporation, The Medicines Company, and Vascular Solutions. He received grants for clinical research from AstraZeneca Pharmaceuticals, Boston Scientific, Bristol-Myers Squibb Company, Eli Lilly and Company, Medtronic, Terumo Medical Corporation, and Vascular Solutions. Dr. James does intend to discuss off-label uses of drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. James does not intend to discuss investigational drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics not approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Story is a professor of cardiology, Department of Cardiovascular Science, University of Sheffield, academic director and honorary consultant in cardiology, the Cardiology and Cardiothoracic Surgery Directorate, Sheffield Teaching Hospitals, Sheffield, United Kingdom. Dr. Story has disclosed the following relevant financial relationships. He served as an advisor or consultant for Acumetrics, AstraZeneca Pharmaceuticals, Bristol-Myers Squibb Company, Daiichi Sankyo, Eisai, Eli Lilly and Company, Merck and Company, Novartis Pharmaceuticals Corporation, Sanofi Aventis, and The Medicines Company. He served as a speaker or a member of a speaker's bureau for Acumetrics, AstraZeneca Pharmaceuticals, Daiichi Sankyo, Eli Lilly and Company, GlaxoSmithKline, Iroko Pharmaceuticals, and Merck and Company. He received grants for clinical research from Acumetrics, AstraZeneca Pharmaceuticals, Daiichi Sankyo, Dynabite Biolabs, Eli Lilly and Company, and Merck and Company. Dr. Story does intend to discuss off-label uses of drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Story does intend to discuss investigational drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics not approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Montalesco is a professor of cardiology, Institut de Cardiologie, Hôpital La Pitié-Salpêtrière, Paris, France. Dr. Montalesco has disclosed the following relevant financial relationships. He served as an advisor or consultant for AstraZeneca Pharmaceuticals, Bayer Healthcare Pharmaceuticals, Boehringer Ingelheim Pharmaceuticals, Daiichi Sankyo, Eli Lilly and Company, GlaxoSmithKline, Menarini Group, Nanosphere, Novartis Pharmaceuticals Corporation, Pfizer, Portola Pharmaceuticals, Sanofi Aventis, and The Medicines Company. He received grants for clinical research from Abbott Laboratories, AstraZeneca Pharmaceuticals, Boston Scientific, Bristol-Myers Squibb Company, Cordis Corporation, Eli Lilly and Company, Gerbe LLC, ITC, Medtronic, Pfizer, Sanofi Aventis, Servier, and Stago. Dr. Montalesco does not intend to discuss off-label uses of drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Montalesco does not intend to discuss investigational drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics not approved by the FDA for use in the United States. The purpose of this activity is to provide healthcare providers with an overview of changes to the guidelines for percutaneous coronary intervention that are relevant to antiplatelet therapy with a focus on approved P2Y12 receptor agonists. This activity is supported by AstraZeneca Pharmaceuticals. To participate in the CME activity, please go to medscape.org/features/audio and select the title.
Welcome to this program entitled PCI Guidelines 2011, Focus on Antiplatelet Therapies. I'm Eric Bates from the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, and I will be moderating an expert panel well-versed in the fast-advancing area of revascularization and oral antiplatelet therapy. Last week, the U.S. revascularization guidelines were released and gave Class 1 indications for clopidogrel, prasugrel, and ticagrelor. The update in the ACS guidelines released last spring did not include discussion of ticagrelor because it was not approved yet, and the STEMI guidelines are not due to be released for several months, so there is some confusion on how to use these drugs, at least in the U.S. The European guidelines are a little bit ahead of us in that they at least have addressed these issues for acute coronary syndromes with their STEMI guidelines due to be released again next year. I was privileged to be on the PCI committee, but I have with me an excellent group of European investigators who know more about this subject than I do. With me today are Stefan James from Uppsala University Hospital in Uppsala, Sweden. Welcome.
Thank you.
Gilles Montalesco from the Institut de Cardiologie, Hôpital Pitié-Salpêtrière, Paris.
Excellent.
Close. Welcome.
Excellent.
And Rob Story from the University of Sheffield in Sheffield, United Kingdom. Welcome, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Clopidogrel has been a mainstay for therapy for the last decade in both acute coronary syndromes and patients with coronary stents, but the drug has some limitations. It has a slow onset of action. It has a relatively mild antiplatelet inhibition effect. It has a slow offset of action, and it has this inter-individual variability that has led to some poor reactivity. Some poor inhibition of platelet activity in patients. So there's an opportunity for new treatment strategies. Three I can think of. One is the double-dose clopidogrel strategy tested in OASIS 7. One is the prasugrel strategy tested in Triton, where Gilles was a major investigator. And then there's the new ticagrelor data from the Plato trial, where you two were on the executive committee. So, Rob, let's start out talking a bit about what happens if we increase the number of loading doses with clopidogrel or we do this double dose maintenance with twice a day instead of once a day. What does that do to pharmacokinetics, and how did that work in the OASIS 7 trial?
So increasing the dose of clopidogrel, the loading dose, gives you a faster onset of action and slightly greater inhibition of platelet aggregation. But we still have the problem, even with 600 milligrams of clopidogrel, with wider inter-individual variability and some poor responders. Partly that's genetic, partly it's other factors, not all well characterized. So it certainly helps doubling the dose of clopidogrel, both the loading dose and the maintenance dose, but it still leaves you with this problem of inter-individual variability and poor responders.
So is it a competitive strategy because it does decrease stent thrombosis, or is it not as quite a good strategy as using one of the newer agents?
Well, certainly preloading with clopidogrel and using a high loading dose both help to reduce the incidence of acute, subacute stent thrombosis. But as I say, you're not getting the consistent P2Y12 inhibition in all patients, And so the more reliable agents, Prasugrel and Ticagrelor, have clear advantages there and are going to give you lower rates of stent thrombosis.
So Gilles, Prasugrel was compared with clopidogrel, standard dose clopidogrel, in the Triton TIMI 38 trial. Can you review the results of that trial for us?
Yes, I can. And the specificity of this study is that it is a PCI study. All the patients get stented at some point, presenting with an ACS, but all of them went to the lab for a PCI and a stent. And in this study, Triton, Prasugrel, 60 milligrams to load, 10 milligrams afterwards as a maintenance dose, was superior to clopidogrel with a standard dose regimen, 300 milligrams, 75 milligrams afterwards. So a more classic regimen of clopidogrel. And we had both types of ACS, non-ST elevation ACS, STEMI patients. And globally, we had the superiority of Prasugrel over clopidogrel in this situation. And we had also an excess of bleeding in this study with Prasugrel, but the net clinical benefit was in favor of Prasugrel. And as you know, we have seen subgroups that had a major advantage of Prasugrel over clopidogrel, the STEMI subgroup, where you had a benefit on the ischemic side, no price to pay on the safety side, same thing for the diabetic patients. And these two type of patients have become the preferred situation for the use of Prasugrel these days in Europe.
Now, you have revascularization guidelines published by the ESC, and you have ACS guidelines. How does Prasugrel get graded in your guidelines?
You know, when you look at the last set of guidelines that we got, the non-ST elevation ACS guidelines, the first striking point is that clopidogrel has been downgraded. And the two new agents are clearly the preferred agents now to treat these patients when they go to the cath lab, especially ticagrelor that you can use before the cath lab and prasugrel that you can use in the cath lab or after the cath lab. In the STEMI situation, doesn't make a difference, as you know, because you treat the patients as soon as you have the diagnosis. But in non-ST elevation ACS patients, it makes a difference. Ticagrelor, obviously, is a drug that you can use ahead of PCI.
So the European guidelines are a little bit different than the U.S. guidelines. In the U.S. guidelines, we don't necessarily compare drugs within a class, but you have done so based on clinical trial results in the European guidelines.
Yes.
Stefan, give us the update on ticagrelor versus clopidogrel in the PLATO trial.
So the PLATO trial was a large trial that hypothesized that a higher level of platelet inhibition with ticagrelor would be superior to standard dose of clopidogrel on top of aspirin in a broad population with acute coronary syndromes, whether or not intended for medical therapy initially or invasive therapy. An important feature also with the PLATO was that pretreatment with clopidogrel was allowed in both treatment groups prior to randomization. The trial overall showed a benefit of ticagrelor over clopidogrel in the reduction of the primary composite endpoint, death, MI, and stroke, with no overall increase in bleedings, according to the PLATO definition, including both non-CABG and CABG-related bleedings. There was, though, an increase in non-CABG-related bleedings, but a trend towards a lower rate of bleedings related to CABG. There were also subgroup analysis, many performed. I want to point out that I think still it's very important always to keep in mind that you should always interpret the main results of the study first before going too deeply into subgroups.
So we're going to do that in a few minutes. Mm-hmm. Okay. So update us on the role of ticagrelor in the European guidelines.
Yeah, so as Jill pointed out, clopidogrel was downgraded. Ticagrelor received the highest level of recommendation.
Equal to Prasugrel.
Equal to Prasugrel. Okay. For the non-STEMI, non-ST elevation ACS guidelines, they got the same level of recommendations, but it's stated a little bit differently in the box. So it's stated in the box what type of patients and what clinical situation this level recommendation refers to.
Okay, so we'll get to that in a few minutes then. So it looks like ticagrelor and prasugrel in head-to-head trials have compared very favorably with clopidogrel. We're not supposed to compare trials, but we do because we're cardiologists. The trials are a little bit different. As you've mentioned, in PLATO, pretreatment with clopidogrel was allowed, not allowed in Triton. You could use 600 milligrams of clopidogrel. You could not use that in Triton, where I think the dose was only 300 milligrams. You did not have to go to PCI, whereas in Triton, almost everybody got revascularized. And there are a lot of similarities between the trials. So, Rob, if from a platelet function standpoint, if I look at pharmacokinetic and pharmacodynamic results and I try to interpret them, are there any big differences that might allow us to figure out if one drug or the other might be superior? Or are they pretty equivalent from a platelet standpoint?
In the onset phase, ticagrelor and prasugrel look pretty equivalent. They both have a rapid onset of action. They achieve consistent and high levels of inhibition, except for occasional situations where the absorption is delayed, as can happen in STEMI. That applies probably equally to both. So the onset phase is remarkably similar between the two drugs. In terms of offset, there's a very clear difference there because prasugrel has this irreversible action, and so the effects wear off over 7 to 10 days as new platelets are released, whereas ticagrelor wears off much quicker, so the recovery is within 72 hours approximately compared to 7 days with ticagrelor. So the faster offset of action, which may potentially be an advantage for those going to surgery. It's important also to stress that it's not necessarily all about platelet inhibition because the drugs have different off-target effects. They're very different classes of drugs, albeit with the same target on platelets, but they have different off-target effects. So ticagrelor also inhibits adenosine reuptake, and that may explain some of the side effects, but also could potentially, theoretically, have some role in reducing some of the negative outcomes. So that's an uncertainty, and so we can't make assumptions when we compare the two drugs.
Okay, so again, breaking the rules, let's compare the trials a little bit. To me, I see a reduction in myocardial infarction rates with both agents versus clopidogrel. I see a reduction in stent thrombosis rates with both agents, as was seen with the double-dose clopidogrel strategy. But there's controversy and confusion on my part, and I'm sure several people's part, on the bleeding results, the stroke results, and the mortality results. So, Gilles, can you go over the bleeding results and the controversies involved with the PLATO trial? With prasugrel?
Yes, as always, when we try to compare these trials, it's tough and risky, but the definitions are not the same across the trials, which is a major point.
Very important.
The Triton study was conducted by the TIMI group. They used the TIMI definitions for bleeding, and there was an excess of major bleedings, which was, visible acutely, but also, and mostly, I should say, chronically on the 10 milligram dose. And the first bleeding complication clearly during the maintenance dose therapy was GI bleeding. And clearly this is something we have to acknowledge, and we have to keep in mind that we can prevent better these GI bleedings by the use of PPIs, proton pump inhibitors. There is no interaction with prasugrel as we know we may have with clopidogrel. So clearly we encourage the use of PPIs in these patients receiving prasugrel. And there was no excess of intracranial bleeding, for example, which is something that we do not like. In the STEMI cohort of patients, we didn't see this excess of bleeding, which is important. The level of platelet activation is very much different in these patients. They all have a clot in the coronary artery. That may be important to acknowledge. They need a potent platelet inhibitor here. And you get the whole effect, no excess of bleeding, so it's almost a free lunch for these patients, and that's probably why the drug has become so popular in some European countries these days in STEMI patients undergoing primary PCI.
So this bleeding concern, I think, has probably kept down the uptake use of prasugrel in the U.S. The trial with ticagrelor initially was reported as having no excess bleeding despite an improvement in efficacy, and then some other analyses have suggested maybe there is a bleeding risk. Can you clarify that for us, Stefan?
Well, so the primary safety endpoint of the PLATO study was the PLATO definition of bleeding, which is a more sensitive bleeding definition as compared to the TIMI. It includes also minor bleedings. And so the overall bleeding definition, there was no increasing bleeding, including non-CABG and CABG. When you try to break that down, you find that there are more minimal, TIMI minimal, or PLATO minor bleedings with ticagrelor, and there are more non-CABG related bleedings, primarily gastrointestinal bleedings.
So compare the two trials. The non-CABG bleeding, it looked like if one treats 1,000 patients, there's an excess of 6 major bleeds with different definitions with each drug. But in the CABG population, of which there were many more in your trial, mm-hmm. There was a difference in bleeding outcomes between the two drugs. But patients on those drugs both had lower mortality undergoing surgery than patients on clopidogrel. Can you explain that disconnect?
Yeah, the lower rate of CABG-related bleedings with ticagrelor probably relates to the faster offset of action that is beneficial. So when going to surgery in an early phase, you get rid of the effect quicker, and it's discussed what the optimal duration or delay from stopping treatment to CABG surgery is. The guidelines recommend a quite long period of time, up to 5 days for ticagrelor, all similar to prasugrel and clopidogrel. The trial protocol defined a time period from 24 to 48 hours. And we have some sub-study analysis that may suggest that the optimal duration or delay is rather 2 to 3 days. 2 to 4 days rather than 5 to 7 days.
Okay, so the stroke issue is the most devastating complication, perhaps, of antithrombotic therapy. Is there a platelet reason why that might happen, Rob, or is that just a dose effect or an age-related effect?
Well, there's clearly effects of platelet inhibition on the risk of intracranial bleeding, and the more platelet inhibition you have, the greater your risk of bleeding. The more anticoagulant effect you have, the more the risk of your bleeding. So generally, overall, the more antithrombotic effect you have, the higher your risk of intracranial bleeding. Now, there are some sort of idiosyncrasies within the studies which are yet to be explained. So are there particular biological pathways that increase the risk of intracranial hemorrhage beyond what you'd expect for that antithrombotic effect? I think this is, you know, something we still have to understand.
So let's compare the drugs. With prasugrel, there's an absolute contraindication for patients with a history of TA or stroke. With ticagrelor, the package insert I read is a contraindication for intracerebral hemorrhage. Those are slightly different.
Yeah, this is interesting, and thank you for asking this, because I'm presenting an abstract tomorrow, actually, about the patients with prior TA or stroke in the Plato. And there were 1,100 patients who had prior TIA or stroke who were included in the trial. Intracranial hemorrhages, those patients were excluded in the trial, so that's the reason they are not recommended to receive ticagrelor. But in those 1,100 patients who had prior stroke or TIA, the overall results is very consistent with the overall results of the trial. And even, interestingly, the hazard ratios are really pointing in favor of ticagrelor versus clopidogrel for all the endpoints, including the bleeding endpoints. There were no increase in intracranial bleedings, no increase in overall bleedings as compared to the overall trial results, and a very consistent mortality benefit of 30%.
So I wonder, from a clinical standpoint, if clopidogrel would be preferred over the age of 75, despite the reassurance you give us on those findings. It's still hard for me to tell the difference between if somebody really had a TIA or not, hard to determine if they've had a stroke, what the etiology of that stroke was. There weren't that many strokes, really, in either study. They've been importantly focused on. But, Jill, should we just use clopidogrel over the age of 75 and avoid this problem completely?
I think a word of caution for these patients with a prior history of stroke is necessary for antiplatelet therapy in general.
Or can I use 5 milligrams of prasugrel?
We could do that, but this subgroup in Triton didn't perform well in terms of net clinical benefit. And, you know, when you look at the subgroup, we are dealing with elderly people, more women, and more frequent comorbidities. And clearly they didn't draw a benefit in Triton with the addition of prasugrel on top of aspirin compared to clopidogrel and aspirin. And if you look at recent other studies, we have, you know, found similar things with other antiplatelet agents, Vorapaxa, for example, an excess of intracranial bleedings again. And this is worrisome. We have to be careful in terms of antiplatelet therapy in these patients with a prior history of stroke. And in the elderly, both studies, Plateau and Triton, have failed. You know, if you look at at the effect, the global effect on the primary endpoint in the elderly, it's a neutral effect, and clopidogrel is probably a good treatment for these old people.
Perhaps I can sort of come in there, because I agree, Gilles, the point estimate for the over 75s looks less impressive, but when you look at the mortality in the ticagrelor group compared to clopidogrel in the over 75s, there's just as much relative risk reduction. And then the absolute risk reduction in mortality in the over 75s is most impressive. So we do see, and we don't know exactly the mechanisms for this, but we are seeing this quite profound mortality reduction, even in the over 75s. And so, yes, they're at higher risk of intracranial hemorrhage, and ticagrelor was associated with more fatal intracranial hemorrhage, but that's a relatively rare event, whereas this cardiovascular and even numerically more non-cardiovascular deaths in the clopidogrel groups we see reduced with ticagrelor in the over 75. So there is something quite sort of intriguing going on there.
So let's talk about the difference in mortality between the two studies, because that may be the most controversial point when we compare these trials. With prasugrel and Triton study, the reduction in mortality from ischemic events was balanced by the increase in mortality from hemorrhagic events, whereas in the Plato study, there was surprisingly a reduction in mortality. So I've heard three explanations for that, because from a platelet function standpoint, I wouldn't expect that dramatic a difference unless it's this adenosine hypothesis, where perhaps by raising levels of adenosine chronically, like we try to do acutely in MI, there's a benefit. I've heard the hypothesis that fewer deaths from bleeding might give a long-term benefit, as it did in the bivalirudin studies. And then I've heard the concept that it may just be play of chance, even though it's a trial of over 18,000 patients, and that you need the second trial to prove the unexpected finding. Can somebody explain and confirm that the mortality finding is a true finding that might lead us to choose one agent versus the other?
My interpretation for ticagrelor is it's not likely to be a play of chance in such a large trial. I think the favorable balance between efficacy and safety is my primary interpretation of the good reduction in ischemic events, which is not coupled with a high increase in bleeding risk with a fast onset of action. But there are also the off-target effects that Rob brought up is very interesting, and I think particularly the dyspnea paper that Rob has published gives some very interesting insights into the possible off-target effects. Namely, patients who experienced dyspnea with ticagrelor compared to those who did not experience dyspnea. In those who did not have dyspnea, there was a much higher rate of the primary composite and mortality associated with dyspnea versus no dyspnea. In those who were randomized to ticagrelor, there was no difference, which indirectly implies that dyspnea is protective. It gives an even better, stronger benefit of ticagrelor versus clopidogrel.
So let's talk about the side effects, because the prasugrel folks will bring that up, I'm sure. So there is an increased risk of dyspnea for a few weeks, an increased risk of bradycardia for a few weeks, a slight elevation of uric acid, and maybe a decrease in GFR. Can you comment on those, Rob, since you're the expert on that?
So, yes.
Those important clinical problems are just something to ignore and tolerate for a couple of weeks and then let the drug effect work?
Well, I mean, dyspnea is an issue for some patients. So there was a 0.8% excess of discontinuation of ticagrelor compared to clopidogrel due to dyspnea in the Plato study. But for the majority of patients who have dyspnea related to ticagrelor, it's mild, well-tolerated. Sometimes it's transient. Occasionally it will persist during treatment, but people are able to tolerate it. It doesn't affect their activity.
So what about my patient with COPD, or what about my patient with a GFR of under 60, or my patient with gout? Mm. Are those relative contraindications or not too important on a clinical level?
I wouldn't say it was a contraindication, but the regulatory authorities have cautioned COPD and asthma. But having said that, we've not seen any effect of ticagrelor on pulmonary function, nor on cardiac function, and so we may still see the same benefits of ticagrelor compared to clopidogrel in those with COPD. So whereas it's listed as a caution, it's not a reason to to avoid treatment.
So the only absolute contraindication for therapy with ticagrelor is a history of intracerebral hemorrhage. All the other subgroups have cautions, but no major red flags.
That's the most important one. Other contraindications are strong CYP3A inhibitors, such as ketoconazole, obviously very rarely used in ACS patients, but they would, because they would strongly inhibit the metabolism of ticagrelor, could potentially increase the risk of side effects.
So, Jill, with prasugrel, there's this absolute contraindication to patients with a history of TIA or stroke.
Yes.
And this remind us about elderly patients and low body weight patients. Are there subgroups that we ought to try to avoid to maximize the benefit of prasugrel?
So the only contraindication really is a prior history of stroke in low body weight patients below 60 kilos or in the elderly. The recommendation is to use 5 milligrams rather than 10 milligrams chronically, loading dose being the same. And the good point with prasugrel is that we do not see other major side effects. So the drug is well tolerated, and the only concern would be to prevent bleedings. Something that we know because this is a potent antiplatelet agent. And again, to come back to this question on mortality, I think there is a fourth explanation, which is the risk of the populations, which were not exactly the same in Plateau and Triton. And the Triton population was at lower risk, so it's more difficult to find an impact on death. And as soon as you look at STEMI patients, for example, you start seeing an effect on death.
I agree, and we published the proportion of patients who were intended for non-invasive strategy at the time of randomization. The absolute benefit on mortality and their primary composite is even greater than compared to the overall population, and that is a really high-risk population.
So let's finish with the discussion of the first antithrombotic agent, aspirin. We're still arguing about dose. We're trying to get the dose lower in the U.S., down to 81 milligrams daily, which the Europeans have embraced more strongly. The one thing I really like about the Plato trials is emphasis on using low-dose aspirins. Rob, can you explain this controversy about 81 milligrams and 325 milligrams of aspirin with ticagrelor and what that means to trial results?
Well, firstly, in terms of the pharmacology, so you only need a low dose of aspirin to give you a very high level of inhibition of cyclooxygenase 1, COX-1. And so 75 to 81 milligrams is plenty to give you a very high level of inhibition of that enzyme. And then as you go above that, the incremental benefit in terms of antiplatelet effect is very marginal. But you're also getting inhibition of prostacycline, which has a positive antithrombotic effect. So that probably explains why there's no benefit to going above low doses of aspirin.
As you know, in the North American population, we had trouble getting the drug approved because there was a paradoxical increase result.
That's right. So, I mean, when there was an analysis of the four geographical regions, as is well known, North America, population trended towards worse outcomes with ticagrelor compared to clopidogrel. So there was intense analysis of that. And obviously, because of difference in guidelines, when you look into it, you find patients with higher maintenance dose aspirin in the North American population compared to elsewhere.
Was that a chance finding, or is that biologically plausible to think that there's a difference in dose?
So the statistical analyses looked sort of quite compelling to suggest that aspirin at this higher dose could be having a detrimental effect on the efficacy of ticagrelor, but equally it's could be a play of chance, because once you start focusing on North America, you're going to find higher aspirin doses. But the statistical analyses did certainly encourage us to look further into this and look for potential mechanisms that might explain that difference in North America. But to be on the cautious side, you should use low-dose aspirin with ticagrelor just in case.
And with everything else, I would argue, maybe the most important message of the day. So our time is up. I have many more questions I would like to ask, but this has been very illuminating. I thank my expert panel, and thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for listening to this excerpt of the CME Activity, PCI Guidelines 2011, Focus on Antiplatelet Therapies. To participate in the CME activity, please go to medscape.org/features/audio and select the title.